This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And just once again, to recap the news that has been breaking this afternoon, federal authorities have arrested three men in connection to the Boston Marathon bombings. They've been charged with obstruction of justice related to actions that they allegedly took after the marathon bombings themselves. They are not being charged with anything directly related to the bombs that went off on Boylston Street, but rather for actions they took allegedly on the campus of UMass Dartmouth, and they are suspected or are alleged to have taken items out of Jahar Tsarnaev's UMass Dartmouth dorm room and placed them allegedly in a landfill in New Bedford in the hours and days after Jahar Tsarnaev was identified by federal authorities then as suspect number two. These three men are scheduled to appear in the Joseph Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston this hour. We have a reporter there, and as that appearance takes place and media are able to report on it, we will bring you the latest from Boston Federal Court. So that's an update on the news that's been breaking this afternoon. And while we wait for that, let me offer you a little something different that matches the mood of this beautiful spring day. And it has to do with one of Boston's great passions, and that is baseball. Because as you know, my co-host Anthony Brooks is off this week. But before he left, he spent some time talking to John Sexton, who's the president of New York University. Sexton, just like Anthony Brooks, is a lifelong baseball fan, a devout Catholic, and of course, an academic. These three passions converge in a course that John Sexton teaches at New York University called Baseball as a Road to God. He's now written a book with the same title with former Boston Globe columnist Thomas Oliphant and the very first student ever to enroll in that course, Peter Schwartz. Now, when Anthony began his interview with John Sexton about baseball as a road to God, he began by asking Sexton to read one of his favorite passages from the book.
Baseball evokes in the life of its faithful features we associate with the spiritual life. Faith and doubt, conversion, blessing, curses and miracles. For some, baseball really is a road to God. That comes early in the book, and I love that passage. So tell me how baseball first featured in your life in a big and deep way.
Well, I grew up in Brooklyn at the time when the Dodgers, the real Dodgers, were in Brooklyn. And as you can tell from this accent, I still carry Brooklyn with me. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers were a binding element of the community of Brooklyn from 1941 to when they left because of the accursed O'Malley in 1958. And those were the years. I was born in 1942, and those were the years when the clarion call, "Wait till next year," ended every season until 1955, and we learned about the virtue of hope and the virtue of loyalty and community through tough times in the cauldron of baseball on the streets of Brooklyn with radios blaring from every window. So as soon as I became a conscious being, you know, in the Catholic Church, which is my church, you reach, quote, the age of reason at the age of seven. And that is about the moment when you really can begin to understand a sport like baseball. And under the tutelage of my dad, again, forging those relationships that form your life with box scores every morning before I went off to serve 6:30 Mass, I learned baseball. And then, of course, the great Robinson appeared just about the time I was reaching the age of reason. And he became a hero for the rest of my life.
Sure. This, of course, Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier. Now, you write beautifully about the 1955 World Series and what it was like to race home from school and turn on that radio. And that World Series, of course, finally rewards your fervor, your religious fervor and faith in this team, right?
This faith that was captured in that phrase, "Wait till next year," came to its culmination on that day, October the 4th, 1955. Now, in those days, baseball was played during the day, even in the World Series. Mm-hmm. It was played on natural grass, and it was experienced mostly on radio. And my best friend Dougie and I were the only two Dodger fans in our neighborhood. And now, usually the nuns would let us listen to a World Series game in class on the radio. But we had done something wrong, and Sister St. James in the eighth grade didn't let us listen to the radio. So when we came out after the seventh inning at 3 o'clock, we turned on these big transistors, and the Dodgers were winning 2-0. And that was when Dougie and I ran home and down into the basement of my house, turned on the radio, and now it was the eighth inning, still 2-0. So the impossible of which we had dreamed was about to happen. And, of course, a few minutes later, ground ball to Pee Wee Reese, throws it to Gil Hodges, who stretches, and our dream had come through.
Finally.
We were praying before the radio. We had taken a metal crucifix down from the wall, and we were holding it in dynamic tension. And Dougie got so excited, he threw his arms up in an exclamation, letting go of the crucifix. And the head of Christ knocked off the top of my tooth.
And I
carried that. It was only about 5 years ago that the dentist said to me, "You've got to fix this chip in your tooth. You're an old man now. This is not a good thing."
Otherwise, it was a wound you bore proudly, I can imagine.
Proudly. It was a mark. It was like a purple heart.
Well, what is it specifically about the sport of baseball that lends itself so well to this intersection with religion?
There's a way in which the timelessness, the literal timelessness of baseball is important, and the slowness of baseball is important in making it a vehicle for developing our capacity to attend to what seems to be small, but actually has tremendous significance. And there's a way, if you really probe deeply into baseball, noticing, for example, that a 1-0 count is different from a 1-1 count, is different depending upon the circumstances in the game. Are there runnings on base? Is it early or is it late? Is the game early in the season or a playoff game or the seventh game of the World Series? All of these small things matter in a kind of kaleidoscope of detail that the true fan can probe. And it turns out, especially in our modern world, where, you know, taking a drink of water is like taking a sip from a fire hose. Modernity has this rapidity about it, the constant hyperstimulation, the constant attention to iPhones, that the slowness of the sport and the intricacy of the sport can teach us the values of contemplation that are very close to the deepest essences of the great religions. Mm. And we can learn the value of living slow occasionally and reflecting occasionally in our life, and how we then can probe through to moments that can't be put in words. Mm-hmm. And it's on that domain that love and the transcendent and the deepest meanings of religion exist.
It's so interesting, you know. I like the way you explore these big themes that are often big themes in religion in this book: faith, doubt, conversion, blessing, curses, miracles, and even the sin of pride. And early in your book, you write about that wonderful, and I'm talking to you now as a Red Sox fan, that wonderful 2004 American League Championship Series between the Red Sox and the Yankees. Of course, we all remember it. The Sox are down 3-0. They were down 4-3 in the bottom of the ninth with Mariano Rivera on the mound, the best relief pitcher ever. And you notice a group of VIP Yankee fans in the stands here in Boston. What happened? What did they do?
It's even worse than noticing them. The night before, the Yankees have pummeled the Red Sox into just a humiliation.
Right. And they'd won 19-8, was it, the night before?
Right. And then a friend who's a part owner of the Yankees calls me that night and says, "Let's fly up to Boston for Game 4 to see the final nail in the coffin." And I fly up with these three VIPs. I'm the fourth in a quartet, and we're seated just to the right of the Yankee dugout. I could touch the lineup card. And in front of us is the New York mayor, Rudy Giuliani, and behind us, Spike Lee, who's an NYU graduate. And so it's like a big party. And at that moment you described, as the ninth inning is beginning, this friend of mine, who was our host, says, "You know, I want to beat the crowd. I got a bum knee. The Yanks have got this one. Let's leave."
Wow.
And Giuliani, you know, the Italian in him emerges, and Spike Lee, the artist, and the three of us could feel the hubris of the moment. And yeah, we said, if anything is going to reverse the curse, it's this kind of hubristic act. But they would not listen to us. The three of them, I stayed. The three of them left, and I, to this day, condemn that person. I'd give his name, but I don't want to give it on radio.
That's so funny. And in the book you write, it reeked of hubris, the sin of pride, pride, one of the seven deadly sins. I love that. All right, here's another theme in your book, which I love, and this is the theme of conversion in religion. And you write in that occurs in baseball, too. When you were a Brooklyn Dodgers fan, they broke your heart and moved to Los Angeles, but you went through a baseball conversion. Tell us about that.
So when the Dodgers moved, I continued to be a Dodger fan, and I rooted for them from the distance. Now, in 1969, our son was born, and I knew at that moment that more than give him his religions, I'd give him the team for which he rooted. And this had been an important bonding thing between my father and me. My father had died when I was a teenager. Now, it turns out Jed, our son, was indeed baptized, but later was bar mitzvahed and is Jewish today, and his family, his wife is Jewish, and his children have been raised Jewish. But he still has the team I gave him in 69. Now, it would have been the obvious choice to go with the Mets. They were the descendants of the Dodgers in a way. But the 50s Catholic in me wanted to give him something with more gravitas, you know. So I chose the monuments. I chose the saints of Ruth and Gehrig. So I gave Jed the Yankees in 69. Now, I remained a Dodger fan. But then when the Yankees began to play the Dodgers, I had to decide what was our relationship going to be. Father-son. And I made the ultimate sacrifice of conversion out of love for my son.
Well, let me ask you about this course that I wish I could take or audit at NYU that you teach, Baseball as a Road to God. You write that it all started when an undergrad told you that he found baseball boring, sacrilege.
It was actually a quite confrontational moment. This young man walked up to me and he confronts me, and I looked at this young man and I said, "You are among the unwashed. If you will only allow your mind to be open, buy 12 books that I will assign you as directed research and do a paper on each, you will realize that baseball is a road to God." Not right. The road, a road to God. And he did it, and we had fun doing it. And the next year, there were dozens of students lined up outside my office to do this directed research. And that was what constituted the first course in which Peter Schwartz, who helped me on the book along with Thomas Oliphant, that class began pressing me immediately to do a book coming out of the course.
And John Sexton, in your mind, what's the purpose of the course? What do you want students to take away? I know it's more than, you're not just trying to convince them to be baseball fans. You're not necessarily trying to establish a greater appreciation of religion. What do you want them to take away?
Well, first I'd say am I not primarily interested in the two things you listed, but I'm distinctly disinterested. It is a matter of indifference to me how they end up feeling about baseball or about religion. What I want them to do, first of all, which is what you try to do in all your courses, is get them to think more actively. As I began to work with the course over the years, I came to a second goal, which was to get them to think about religion in a different way, to think about not the hierarchy and the formal notions of religion, not the dogmatism and the intellectualization of religion, but the religious experience, the way a Marcia Eliot or a William James writes about it, just so they could ask themselves the question, do I want to get involved with this dimension? And then finally, in what I would call kind of Baseball as a Road to God 3.0, I began to realize the unique, and that's an overused word, but I think the unique capacity of baseball, if you attend to it, to develop the contemplative skills. Mm. Now, when students leave the course, I don't mind if they're not attracted to baseball as the vehicle for that, but I want them to leave with a heightened sensitivity to the importance of living slow and noticing.
I see. It sounds fascinating. A lot of people will talk about baseball is their religion, and I'm not sure that they mean it literally, but do you think it is the case for some people that baseball fills a void that religious faith might otherwise fill, or is that overstating it a little bit?
I do think that what some people mean when they say baseball is their religion is that they do experience the ineffable. Mm-hmm. They do experience something that breaks the plane of the ordinary. Eliot would say that moves from the profane to the sacred somehow at the experiential level. It may be in a deeper than usual bond between people. It may be in some kind of ecstatic, in the root sense of that word, release. But there is something that can be experienced by the devoted baseball fan that does take us beyond, in a way. And in that sense, it does move into the same planetary system in which religion works when we talk about religion in its purest form.
Mm. Well, John Sexton, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for this, and thank you for the book.
Thank you so much. It's been fun talking to you.
John Sexton is the president of New York University. He's the author of Baseball as a Road to God, Seeing Beyond the Game, which he wrote with Thomas Oliphant and Peter J. Schwartz.
And my co-host, Anthony Brooks, with that interview. Stick with us because in a moment we'll take a look at the final 8 weeks in the Senate special election and we'll bring you the latest on the arrests today in connection with the Boston Marathon bombing. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.